You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Thursday, 4 September. We've got U.S. import-export data due late this afternoon. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from MoneyWeb Studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Nwabo Mqabela, Perpetua Investment Managers. I'm going to ask him a simple question. What sort of results has really stood out from him? Because I'm just getting overwhelmed with numbers coming through. And then we're chatting with Rui Bagatini from Woolies. Local did fine. Australia did horror. And then we're chatting Toys R Us, Babies R Us. They've acquired Toy Zone in the business of toys locally. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. Anglo American says final goodbye to platinum. Plans to sell its remaining 19.9% stake in Valterra Platinum to institutional investors. Business Day, Aspen to slash manufacturing unit costs to unlock value. CEO says performance of the sterile unit is a drag on earnings. Morning markets, US was green, S&P up 0.5%, NASDAQ 0.8% higher. The East is mixed. We've got Sydney up 0.25%, Tokyo a little over 1% higher, Hong Kong down 1.2%, and Tencent down 0.75%. Commodities also mixed. Gold futures lower at 3,587, Brent lower at 67.26, PGMs are higher, platinum 1,431, palladium 1,164. The Rand is 1770, Bitcoin 111,400, top 40 opening call, green open 240 points or 0.25% higher.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Nwabo Mqabela, Perpetua Investment Managers. Nwabo, as I said there in the intro, we are knee-deep. No, nay, we are neck-deep in earnings coming through at the moment, mostly for the June year and mid-year ends. What has stood out for you? What's one that really grabbed your attention, either for good or bad reasons?
Hi, good morning, Simon, and good to chat to you again, and good morning to the listeners as well. The way I looked at it is really some of the market themes that are coming through, you know, that we're seeing in this results season. And probably the first one is around how sensitive the market is to news flow around earnings.
Yeah.
You know, so not uncommon to see share prices down north of 10% on very marginal misses, as was the case, I thought, with Anheuser. Though they grew earnings, Truett's is down 20% since coming out with their trading statement. Sasol plus 40, you know, so we've been trying to kind of understand what's driving all this. There's obviously, you know, algos and other programmatic investment strategies, but those have been with us for some time.
Yeah.
You know, so we don't necessarily think that's the driver. I think probably underlying these moves, there's a lot of policy uncertainty. And I would say disruption risk to businesses. And I think the market does use these kind of near-term earnings as signifiers of whether that's getting better or getting worse. It does also tend to be a feature of markets, you know, around market tops or high uncertainty. And then probably a couple of other ones I'd say is what's been interesting to see, which is a global trend, is this weakness in food consumption, particularly snacking. So, you know, you've seen Nestle's chocolate volumes down something like 8%, which, you know, U.S. alcohol consumption continues to be weak. It's not normal to see these kind of declines with these traditional defensives slash staples. You know, so to some degree, it's related to affordability. So that's what Diageo said in their results that they've seen in their surveys, at least. That seems to be the key driver. But I think one can't ignore the impact of these GLP-1s.
Yeah.
you know, I saw Eli Lilly's drug Mounjaro growing 85% year on year. And so I think at the margin, they could be driving kind of a something that's uncommon, this kind of weakness in this category. And then probably another one that has become interesting is around our banks and how corporate investment bank has become so meaningful for them. So it contributes half of Standard Bank's earnings, and it was up 38% year on year, and it contributes half of Absa's earnings, which was up 10%. Now, Absa's interesting in the sense that it was previously considered primarily as a retail bank. You know, so it just shows how much they've pivoted towards corporate investment banking, particularly in Africa. We do, to some degree, we think it reflects, you know, Capitec's strength. So competing away that retail profit pool. And that we actually, in this recent result, we thought we saw it in some of the payments business that Capitec is gaining share. Mm-hmm. And that's traditionally an area where the banks have been strong. And again, you know, Discovery also yesterday just alluding to the fact that they've reached profitability sooner than expected. And they are accelerating client acquisition. So some competition, but at the same time, you know, there's some green shoots of corporate lending and corporate investing, particularly like, for example, in the energy deals, you know. So yeah, I suppose that's something we'll continue to monitor, whether you're seeing some improvement in corporate investment as a potential driver of economic growth.
Yeah, and I like that. Sensitivity to earnings, weakness in food consumption. I take your point. The GLP-1s probably on the margins, definitely having an impact there, but to the point on the margins. And I have to say, I hadn't fully noticed that sort of growth in the commercial investment banking. But yeah, I mean, Standard Bank's always been big in it, but as you point out, Absa really picking up there as well. I like the idea. Capitec's taking everything. I've noticed the big banks now all just offer private bank accounts. They don't want to do the sort of mass market. They leave that to the Capitec. We leave it there. Lon Robin Kabela, Perpetua Investment Managers, appreciate the early morning. Give you money, smoother returns with Stanlib Asset Management. The Stanlib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting with Rui Bagattini, CEO of Woolies. We had results for 52 weeks ending 29 June. Revenue was up 6.1%, HEPS off 23.9%, dividend down 29.2%. Rui, I want to get to some of the challenges you had in the results, but Woolworths Food, a really standout performer, Dash growing. I mean, food, I was going to say, is the easy part of the business for you. I imagine it's not easy, but it kind of works like clockwork.
Well, it is a great business, and I mean, it's built on obviously decades of capability and experience. And we talk about the need to keep raising the bar. We have a lot of competitors sort of yapping at our tails, mm-hmm. etc., and we continue trying to drive improved performance across every metric. And it's great to see that we do, though, Simon. I mean, if you look at all the major metrics that you would sort of evaluate a business like this by, including the customer metrics, service experience, innovation, all of those sort of things, we sort of do stack up very, very well. We've got the strongest like-for-like sales in the sector.
Yep.
Returns are world-class. I mean, it is just a remarkable business all around. We're very pleased with its performance.
Fashion, beauty, home, my reading the numbers, a better second half than the first half. I want to touch particularly on beauty for a moment. You launched a standalone store last year. How is beauty doing? It certainly seems to be a focus in the South African retail space at the moment.
Yeah, I think everyone's seeing it as an opportunity and everyone's sort of trying to get into it. I mean, we've been in it for a little while. Mm-hmm. We've obviously seen beauty as a major growth category for us. In fact, we continue to double down on that category. That business has grown by two times, and it'll be trebling within the next year or two for us. I mean, we have a really big market share now, and generally, when we research the consumers and customers out there, we're seeing increasingly as the sort of shopping destination for beauty products in the country. We've built the business over the last year or so by growing it by close to 15%, mm-hmm. 8% new customers coming into the brand. We now have a dedicated, active, loyal customer base in beauty of over 1 million customers. So, you know, it's a significant opportunity for us. And what it really also represents is, if you look at our total business and the portfolio of categories we have, is this cross-shop opportunity. You know, when people come into shop beauty, they typically, go a little bit beyond the beauty hall and they go into other areas. And in fact, when you look at the food customer and the beauty customer, there's a very significant overlap there. You know, One of the other things we've done in beauty is dialed up our private label business, W Beauty. It's about a quarter of the business, doing exceptionally well. And we've even opened our own manufacturing facility here in Cape Town. So to sort of support the growth in that particular segment. So yeah, very, very, very excited about beauty.
And how's fashion been doing? Fashion has been a challenge. It was one of the things you were keen to turn around. How did fashion do for the period?
Yeah, I mean, I think when we spoke the last time, we spoke about one of the setbacks we had in the first half. And therefore, it ended up being a bit of a tale of two halves, and the second half being significantly better. We've completed our turnaround in the fashion business. You know, we've rolled out all of the technologies we've been investing in over the last couple of years, and that really accelerated our growth throughout the course of the second half. So again, in this particular category, the fashion business had the strongest like-for-like sales growth in the sector, bar no one. So a really good performance. And that momentum has continued into our new financial year. So when you look at all the operating metrics and even some of the financial metrics now that come with it, we're really pleased where it's at. And, now it's all about doubling down on execution and looking forward. You know, continued growth is really the mantra now for that business.
Yeah, and South Africa, I mean, broadly, the food, the fashion, beauty, home, all doing well. The big challenge for you remains Country Road in Australia.
That's spot on. I mean, not difficult to miss. our issue fundamentally throughout the whole year, you know. And whilst market context isn't great in Australia, you know, it's not the reason we would look to say why we turned in a weak performance there. For us, we've made some very important decisions, very specific decisions that led to the numbers that we see coming through for CRG. This is a sort of a sequence process we've been going through with our businesses in Australia to get to where we are today. And we sold that David Jones business a couple of years ago, as you know. Mm-hmm. That still had a bit of an overhang in that it was very integrated back end with our Country Road Group brands. And we needed to separate that out and then set up CRG as a standalone business. And so that really required us to fundamentally reset that business, change its operating model, fix structural economics, take out lots of costs, position the brands. And we did this all in the course of the last financial year. It could have been something we could have, taken maybe 2 years or 3 years to do. We made the deliberate call to sort of pull off the Band-Aid and go for it so that we can actually come into this financial year with, again, a lot of the heavy lifting done and with a lot more optimism about positive earnings growth coming back into that business.
Yeah, and worst behind you. A last question, Absolute Pets. I think this has been present for the full period, if my memory serves well. How's Absolute Pets doing?
Correct.
Because, I mean, the stores are busy, and, I mean, animals, I've got a pet. They're expensive these days.
Now, I was going to ask you, are you spending any less money on your pet this year than you did last year? Because we're seeing massive growth coming through in this category. And it's, a very exciting category. We've sort of housed this business in our W Ventures division. And that has really enabled it to really continue. It's really accelerated growth. I mean, we've now offering pet across more than 250 locations across the country.
Oh, wow.
And it continues to grow, and across multiple categories. It's a really strongly growing category for us, and something, again, is getting more competitive. But again, I think we think we've got advantages in this space that play to our strengths. And so we're looking forward to seeing this grow even more significantly going forward.
Yeah, my pet's costing a lot more because we tried her on a fancy food and she really, really liked it. So she's now hooked on some fancy food.
It's that rotisserie chicken, on Sunday.
not quite that fancy. We'll leave it there. Okay. Murray Bagatini, CEO.
All right.
Willies, appreciate the time. And that's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. So, Willies, local, fine, doing good, actually. Country Road's the horror. But is it a worth a look for recovery? I mean, have they got the worst out? Have they ripped that plaster off, as Roy said there? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. The Standard Flexible Income Fund delivers capital preservation and consistent top quartile inflation-beating returns. Let your money keep working with Standard Asset Management even after you retire.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting with Dr. Pumla Nganga, chairperson, Toys R Us and Babies R Us. Pumla, appreciate the time. You've just announced the deal to acquire the 13 Toy Zone stores. These are Gauteng, this is Durban. How many stores does this give the entire group at this point with that acquisition of the 13 new stores?
Thank you, Simon. The acquisition results in 61 South African stores. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we've got the existing ones in SADC, which adds 3, which is a total of 64. But in South Africa, it's 61.
Which SADC countries are you in?
Zambia, Botswana, and Zimbabwe.
61, and then the 3 outside. How big is the local toy market in South Africa? We're a country with the consumer under pressure, but I imagine toys and certainly babies are, in many senses, evergreen.
They're evergreen in the sense that what we've learned is that parents, no matter which economic category they come from, are wanting to do the best for their children. Mm. And so will always seek the best toys for their children and the best educational resources and the best for their babies. The accuracy of market information on the toy subcategory is actually inaccurate, I must be honest, because most of the companies, certainly on the independent and toy specialist category, are private. Then you've got the big box retailers, and then you've got the online players.
Yeah.
Therefore, there are numbers that we see that come from research houses that are being quoted in the market, but we would err on the side of caution in terms of accurately providing a number simply because it's very difficult to construct that number. So there is a number that's been quoted in the media of the 9 billion, trillion number.
Yeah.
But the truth of the matter is that we would estimate that we're closer to half of that because whatever numbers that we quote, we'd want them to be based on robust data points.
Gotcha. I hear you, and difficult to get it. You said something interesting. You referred to education. I remember being a kid a long time ago, and toys were toys. I mean, there was some educational element to it, but I think these days there's a lot more education to it, and I think particularly in the baby space. I've got a friend who recently had a kid, and the kid is loving the toys. They're not that they're not toys, but they're sort of that educational slant to them.
Absolutely, and this is a point that we really want to emphasize as a company that is socially responsible. Firstly, we do believe that toys must be accessible to most South Africans.
Mm-hmm.
And South Africans, depending on their economic means, must have access to toys depending on what they prefer for their children. The educational and developmental benefit of toys is unquestionable.
Mm.
Play is important. It's important for cognitive development. It's important for psychosocial development. It aids in gross motor, whether you're riding that black motorbike or whether you're playing with Lego, which is more fine motor development. They contribute to eye-hand coordination, pretend play, problem-solving, creativity. And therefore, we honestly believe that from the perspective of the parent and also from the perspective of the future generation, we would like to encourage and retain the ability of children to derive educational and developmental benefit from toys. Because if you think about it, post-COVID, there was an emphasis on digital forms of entertainment and toys. And is it really that we want to have a generation of digital natives who have limited psychosocial skills and creativity and problem solving? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
We want children as South Africans who will enjoy play, who will derive pleasure, and also who will benefit from the psychosocial benefits of toys.
Yeah, and I take your point. Ultimately, all toys are developmental, and absolutely, you know, knowing how to use a digital, that's important, but I think, you know, toys are way more important. You mentioned Lego, and that then got me thinking. We're talking toys and children, but toys and adults, Lego as the obvious example, board games, action figures. I've got a friend who buys the superhero action figures. Toys is kind of moving up the age group at the same time as well.
If you were to look at me, you would see that I'm actually smiling because there is this category that we call the kidult, which is the adult who still enjoys, for example, Lego. So as you quoting friends, I have friends who still want to build Lamborghinis with Lego. And therefore, the kid out category, which is the adult who still enjoys the beauty of toys and the enjoyment that they find from toys, but also the challenge and complexity of having this massive Lego piece that has, let's say, 1,000 pieces to create a beautiful picture of nature or to create a car or a vehicle is very prevalent. And that is a global phenomenon. And for us, that's very exciting because it's a growth vector for us as Toys R Us. It's a growth vector because the kid-out phenomenon, we think, is an opportunity and a new horizon for toys.
Yeah, I helped my nephew with the Lego, and I got to say, it was a little bit harder than I was expecting. There was easy 1,000 pieces, and it took us an entire day. It took us an entire Christmas day to do.
What were you constructing?
It was a classic Lego. It was a police station with jails and everything. It was huge fun, but it was something I thought would take, I don't know, 5 minutes, an hour. It literally took us all day and was to the point. And I suppose this is part of what it is. It was, you know, my nephew and I having a huge fun day building the police station. It ticked all the boxes for him, developmental, for me, fun, and of course, bonding for both of us. It was a great experience, but we'll leave it there. That's Dr. Pumla Mganga, chairperson, Toys R Us and Babies R Us. Appreciate the time. That's it for today. We're chatting with Chantal Marks yesterday. She, of course, F&B Wealth and Investments. Talking about local food retailers after ShopRite results. And we asked her, which to buy? And she said, look, ShopRite is your core portfolio, but the others have all got potential investment cases, mostly for recoveries. We asked you, are there any worth looking at? Over two-thirds of you agreed with Chantal and said, look, it's just about ShopRite. Pick and Pay and Boxer shared the rest of the votes. Spa? No love for Spa. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. SARB, Treasury and inflation targeting.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.